shirt sleeves.
I am out my shirt sleeves. How do you like those pictures, Ben?
Yeah.
New Orleans. Maybe I'll be happy in a castle with Maxine. Maybe I'll be happy if I shoot my band.
And we are on the radio in New Orleans and 34 other locations, 33 other locations. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at Pod Bay 2A at Intergalactic Prairie Studios, a mile above sea level. We alter your locus coeruleus by rejuvenating your brain with warming radio waves that raise your brain up to a toasty and tasty 325 degrees Fahrenheit. Can you feel it, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker? Can you feel it working?
I can feel it working.
Have you been contacted by the government?
I have not. I need to be pretty soon because it's unfortunately about tax time.
Ew.
But
show me on the doll where the government touched you, Ben.
Here in my wallet.
Oh, man.
Constantly. Never ending.
Yeah. You know, other talk radio shows say things like that. Probably not as clever, but do say things like that and say, you know, we got to reform this IRS. These tax codes are out of control. And I'm like, man, you're polishing the brass on the Titanic. Why not call for peacefully? Why not even start with the mind experiment of why do we need taxes or why do we need a government? You know, the love of the state, even if you complain about the state and say the state's horrible and I don't like paying all these taxes and I don't like my taxes going to this thing. I only want them going to that thing. Well, what if you could keep all your money and just fund whatever you wanted? And the roads would still get built, man. They'd get built cheaper and better and more efficiently by without involving the mafia, the government mafia, or the actual mafia in a lot of Atlantic northern states on the East Coast. Okay, so we are here to testify, brothers and sisters, in the 12-step fellowship known as Statists Anonymous, which is something Ben and I'll say we made it up. You know, it's anonymous, but we're not breaking we'll get to the steps, the traditions on anonymity at some point. They're going to be a little different than AA, especially since you're not supposed to talk about your membership in AA. It's literally in the canon of it. You're not supposed to talk about the level of press, radio, and films. And this is radio. And it's kind of funny because they wrote that back before the internet. And people apply that. They say it should apply to the internet too. And I agree with the AA traditions, but our fellowship's a little bit different, and we're back on radio. We're back on the 1930s technology here, but we're not on that tradition yet. We're not even on the traditions. We're on the steps, and this is part 7 of a 36-part series applying the 12 steps, 12 traditions, and 12 concepts of world service of Alcoholics Anonymous to the disease of statism, the disease of loving the state, and the disease of love, you know, being wrapped up in bad people and bad ideas, which is kind of what drives a lot of loving the state. So, Ben Stone, what is step 7 in Statists Anonymous?
Step 7 is we humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings.
Him?
And, you know, yeah.
Okay, do the God disclaimer.
So we're not necessarily saying you have to be, you know, you have to accept theology, you have to accept religion, you have to be a Christian, you have to be a Muslim, you have to be, we're not saying any of those things. We are simply saying that we seek some higher power than ourselves to help us through these situations. And in this case with number 7, we humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings.
Yeah.
So we're looking at this, you know, I say this in one form or another in each one of these episodes. Faith in the state serves the same function as alcohol. It turns your responsibility off so you don't have to think about, you know, what you're doing or what you're asking others to do on your benefit or on your behalf. I'm sure you've known those people who drank too much and then they did something stupid and then they're afterwards and they're back sober and they're, you know, looking back at what they did and they're like, well, you know, I don't know, I was really drunk and that's the excuse.
I was really drunk at the time.
Yeah, that's the excuse that's given. But government is the same way. You know, we can just write it off as an excuse. Well, but it's for the greater benefit, or it's, you know, no, it's not. All you're doing is lying to yourself to justify some really bad behavior so that you can continue doing that same thing over and over.
Preach it, Brother Ben.
All government does is numb the mind, just like alcohol stupefies the brain. That's
and take
what
your
government
money.
Does.
And take your money. And if you're an alcoholic, you spend all your money on alcohol too. So a lot of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And whether in any kind of addiction, you know, whatever it might be, they all seem to have one thing in common. They all suck your money away.
And an addict to alcohol or any drug will always, you know, spend their children. If they're down to their last, you know, $20 and their kid needs medicine that they desperately need, and they also need to get their fix of heroin or crack or alcohol, an addict will always spend that money on the heroin, crack, or alcohol and not on something their family needs. And government's the same way. Like, they don't care if your kids are starving. They'll take your money, and they'll take your house, and they'll throw you in jail if you don't pay it. That's another way that statism is like addiction.
Yeah, they'll take every penny you have and then punish you for not having more for them to take.
Yeah, and they'll take it after
really you're, strange.
They'll take it after you're dead. That's you know, at least the heroin dealer, like, you don't have to keep going to him to buy heroin from him after you're dead. You get relief from that when you die.
Yeah, that's really, you know, death tax is really a weird thing that they will. My wife and I were talking about this the other day, that because she read that Obama, who's a socialist, a liar, and his feet stink.
Yep.
Obama is trying to inflict another death tax or another phase of it onto people. And I mentioned to her, you know, that this hits family farms disproportionately to the rest of society. Because if you're, you know, your grandpa bought some land in 1953 or something like that, and it was worth very little back then, and he's worked it all these years, and he's improved it, and he's made a living working that farmland, and then he dies, and you inherit it, and all out of nowhere, all of a sudden, that farmland is worth millions, and they want to tax you on it right off the bat.
Yeah.
You have to sell your family farm just to pay the taxes on your grandpa dying.
Yeah, and having a farm that's worth $1 million, if you're a farmer, does not mean you're a millionaire. You know, you could be pocketing $30,000 a year, working 80 hours a week, you know, at a farm or more, that's worth $1 million. And after you pay everything you have to pay to keep that farm going, you know, you're not making all that much money. And it's not like you can sell the farm and still be a farmer. And people who farm want to farm, and they want to pass that on to their family. They don't want to have to pay, you know, they don't want to have to sell off a quarter of it each time it's passed a generation, because after three generations, it's gone. But that's what they want you to do now. That's what Obama wants, to pay for his drones to kill brown babies in the Middle East.
Yeah, and that's not just, you know, talk either. I mean, that's really what government does. Democrats, Republicans, it's all the same. They really enjoy blowing up people in foreign countries that are not really a threat to anyone.
Oh, and the thing, and Obama literally authorized the drone murder of a teenage boy who's an American citizen born and raised in Colorado because the guy's dad was a bad guy, supposedly. You know, the guy's dad was yelling for violence against the American government. He hadn't done any. But he's yelling for it, and they droned the dad. Like, even if you could argue in some way that was ethical, there was nothing ethical about droning the kid. The kid wasn't like his dad. He didn't believe those things. He wanted to, like, you know, play his Game Boy and watch the MTVs. He was like any American suburban kid that you know. He's probably like your kids. And, you know, it's kind of funny, too, because Obama said, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon Martin. But no, if he had a son, it would actually look more like that kid he droned.
Ahead, yeah, man. And it shouldn't be, there shouldn't be a mistake made on this. The kid was not too close to his dad when his dad got droned. It was two separate attacks, one intentionally to kill the dad and one intentionally to kill the kid. And when the kid was killed, he was literally sitting down in an open air restaurant with some other kids that were his age having a meal. And that's when they got droned. It was totally separate from when the dad got droned. So, you know, I've heard it justified. Well, that's what he gets for being too close to his dad.
That is what I was getting at. That is so sick, man. I mean, like, you know, what American would allow that of an of like someone in his family? You know, like, oh, someone in your family, you know, your cousin is trying to overthrow the government, so we're going to kill your wife. I mean, you know, would you co-sign that?
Well, you know, in a weird, twisted way, that's exactly what happened with Randy Weaver. He was wanted under the suspicion that he had sold an illegal shotgun to an undercover agent.
Who asked the agent who created the crime by like goading him into sawing off the shotgun for him.
Yeah, actually told him where he wanted cut.
Which is kind of weird because it's like, you know, anybody who buys and sells guns should have said, I ain't going to do it. You know, if you want to do it, you could do it. Why did he do it for him? But he was also didn't have a lot of money. They picked on a guy who was broke and took advantage of him and, you know, got him to do something to feed his family, which they often do.
And then they surrounded his house and a sniper shot Randy Weaver's wife and while she was standing in the doorway.
An American sniper.
Yeah. Shot her. She's standing there holding their infant daughter. Shot her in the head and killed her. She was not holding a gun. She was not a threat to anyone. But the sniper had the orders that if you get a clear shot at her, take it.
Ron Harucci was the name of that American sniper. I think people should know that.
He was also a sniper at Waco, and it's kind of hinted that he was one of the main ones that were picking people off through the windows at Waco when they were burning and trying to get out.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because there were shell casings found around.
That's a rumor. We don't know that. But he definitely shot Mrs. Weaver in the face while she was holding her baby.
Yeah, and that even went to court. And because he was obeying orders, he was not held responsible for that. Now, that's really weird because that's exactly the defense that the Nazis tried to use at the Nuremberg trials. They were just following orders.
Yeah, just following orders. The modern version of it is, I'm just doing my job. Whenever somebody says that in a kind of like apologetic, but like whatever, what are you going to do about it kind of way, they're just like the Nazis in the Nuremberg trial, but they're not in the they're not to the trial yet. That's what I say.
Yeah, and you know, the defense didn't work then on moral grounds, and it shouldn't work now when some cop or some military person hides behind that excuse.
Yeah.
But they, you know, that's what the government is. It's that excuse, just like I was talking about with alcoholism. You're saying, well, I was really drunk at the time. Well, I was just following orders. Well, you know, they should have obeyed the law, or he shouldn't have got pulled over.
The world loves to create systems and excuses for people not being accountable for what they do. That's pretty much what government is. It's a device set up. It's a collective hallucination for passing the buck in murder.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've been working with computer programmer Derek Slopey to create Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, open-source software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try the Windows beta version of Fiend Phone right now at fiendphone.com. But we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiend Phone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com and join the conversation, because if you don't, you'll set liberty back 2,500 years.
That's fiendphone.com. FENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiend Phone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Freedom Fiends. So much truth. So we're talking about step 7 in Status Anonymous. We talked in the first segment a lot about the evils of government and how it is just a big scam to murder and steal from everybody whenever it wants to and not be accountable. Step 7 is all about accountability. Step 7 is humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings And the God here can be, you know, a higher power, or it can be advice, not even advice, but experience, strength, and hope from people who've been where you're trying to go. And you can even co-sponsor people in Status Anonymous. Ben and I do that with each other. We have long talks on the phone and in person and pass ideas back and forth and bounce things off each other and don't just try to make all the decisions on our own in various areas of our lives. So when you say, I was just following orders, you're absolutely not admitting your shortcomings and not being responsible for them. So step seven is all about accountability and, you know, taking responsibility for your actions. So what do you got, Ben?
Well, it's also about humility. You can't be accountable for your actions unless you can humbly face the reality of what, you know, of the situation that you're in. So that's why it says in there, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. You have to kind of lower yourself off a pedestal and say, no, I'm not perfect. I don't have all the answers. But together, you know, we can work through these things. Humility is, you can't really improve. You can't fix the things that are wrong in your life unless you can honestly be humble about the situation that you're in. You can't do that with government if you're constantly thinking, well, next election, we'll just fix this.
Yeah. And I think this is the place that a sponsor would point out, or a sponsee would often ask, like, being humble, I don't want to be a worm crawling on the ground. You know, I don't want to be, I'm sorry, you know. And the thing is, like, true humility is very different from humiliation. It's not, right. You don't have to be face down in the dirt. You don't have to be feeling bad about who you are and what you've done. Really, a lot of this stuff is about making amends to people and yourself. And what amends means, and this is the step that we're getting towards here, the next couple steps. It's not about just paying back your debts, although that's part of it. It's not about just saying, I'm sorry. You know, the word amend literally means to mend, to change, to fix and make whole. And you can go apologize, I'm sorry, you know, like hand on forehead to everybody you've ever harmed. You can pay back every cent you've ever messed somebody out of or owed to somebody and still not have made an amend at all. Because amends involve not doing the same things going forward. That's the second part of doing amends. And you don't need to be hand on head weeping to properly do amends. You can't do them and be cocky. It's more like, you know, you have to be a little below confident, and then you make the amends and you can come back up to being confident but not cocky, which is a great way to live. And it's kind of the goal in all this kind of self-improvement stuff. You know, you don't want to, before I really examined my life and did these steps and did other things to, you know, kind of become a better person and not have to live in my own spiritual filth with everything I did. I pretty much had two operating modes with the world at different times, or sometimes simultaneously. And it was either that I was God, that I was the king of the universe and treated the world like that, or that I was, you know, a piece of dog crap under God's foot, you know, on the bottom of his shoe. Like, I was either, I am everything, bow before me, I am king, baby. Or, you know, sometimes the same day or even the same hour, or sometimes even at the same time, part of me would be like, I'm not worthy, I'm horrible, which kind of just drives that yelling that you are God from a mountaintop. You know, it's a little boy whistling in the graveyard, even as an adult kind of thing. It's the king baby thing. And really the best way to interface with the world, and the way that you will have the most peace, have people not hate you. And, you know, like, there's people that hate me, but it's not for the same reasons it used to be. It's just because they don't like what I say. It used to be because what I did more. You know, you could live a decent life and be interested. You don't have to end up square too. And I think that's the biggest thing I would say. A lot of people think that, like, doing any kind of self-improvement or anything that involves humility is going to make you square. And I'm weirder now than when I was shooting heroin every day, in a good way. I'm not square, man. So don't worry about being square or, you know, a groveling peasant. You can do this stuff and end up being a strong, helpful, wonderful member of your own society of your own making. We'll be back on the Freedom Fiends.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Freedom Fiends, Step 7 in Statist Anonymous Study Guide. This is our book study meeting in Statist Anonymous, trying to get rid of the love of the state that some people, that some men have in their hearts and some women have in their hearts. And it leads to death, destruction, murder, even by proxy, like just by voting. Even if you're lazy and don't vote, but you're like, well, we need the roads. Like that kind of thought, that kind of speech, that's what perpetuates this collective hallucination that has backed with guns called the government. And I'm not talking about the U.S. government. I'm not anti-American. If we lived in Guam, I'd be saying these same things about, well, that's actually America, isn't it? I think. But
yeah.
If we lived in England, I'd be railing about the government and, you know, probably talking more about the British government than the American government. But that's just because it would be the one that would be taking my taxes and threatening to throw me in cages for anything I do. So it's not about a government. It's about the government, which it's about government, which is every government from the UN to every nation, to every state or province or prefecture, to every county, to every city, to every town, to, you know, whatever neighborhood watch thing is stealing your money to. I like the idea of independent private neighborhood watches, but not like they had that one in Florida. I don't know about that guy. I have no opinion on that. But Ben Stone, Step 7. Going to read from the step from the book. Until we write our own book, we're going to borrow the AA 12 and 12. So what do you got?
So here's a really nice little paragraph, kind of referring to what you were talking to right before the last break. It says, humility as a word and as an ideal has a very bad time of it in our world. Not only is the idea misunderstood, the word itself is often intensely disliked. Many people haven't even a nodding acquaintance with humility as a way of life. Much of everyday talk we hear and a great deal of what we read highlights man's pride in his own achievements. And it's kind of contrasting, it's kind of pointing out what you were talking about before the break, that a lot of people misunderstand the word humility. They think it's groveling or beating yourself and it's not really
flagellation. Yeah. Like the monks used to do where they'd whip themselves.
Yeah. Or I'm thinking of a Monty Python scene where the monks are walking along and they say something in Latin and smack themselves in the forehead with a board.
That's what I'm thinking of too, which is not that far from reality. In actual, often, like historically, but also in like the actions people take day to day. Go ahead.
I've often thought about hearing that over and over and learning the phrase that they say, yeah. And just to test people out, just, you know, start chanting that phrase over and over and see if anybody catches on to it. But then again, I have that weird thing inside me that just wants to mess with people and see what their reactions are going to be.
Yeah.
That's something I think, you know, this is way off the topic, but this is something that I see in Davi Barker, one of our other co-hosts, that is wonderfully entertaining to me to sit with Davi and have him tell me about some of the goofy things that he's done just for entertainment purposes over the years, you know, like dressing up as the Emperor of San Francisco and having a parade and some of the really funny things that he's been involved in over the years.
Yeah.
But that, you know, that's totally not the topic today.
Yeah, it is, because it speaks to, you know, I would say he has a lot of humility and like no humiliation. He's a good example of, you know, like kind of a place in the world to strive to. He does it better than me, I think.
Yeah, he does it better than me too, and he does it sober. You know, it was really funny seeing him at Porkfest when almost everybody at Porkfest is really, really inebriated, and here's Davi right in the midst of them, dead sober, and not involving himself in any substances. Yet he's still having a blast. He was still having fun, which, you know, a lot of people who are that sober look down their nose at anybody who partakes in substances. But Davi doesn't even do that. He doesn't even judge other people like that.
Yeah.
It's really, that's really, to me, you know, I appreciate that in someone.
No, he hangs out with drunk people, and then when they say funny things, he writes it down and puts it on t-shirts and sells them, and then they never remember that they said it. And they congratulate him like, man, that's funny. He actually said
that's
that.
That's not
I don't
a
know.
Joke. He does that.
Yeah. And he admits it.
Oh, man. We're straying from our topic.
No, we're not.
We humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings.
Yeah.
It is important, though, to be able to, you know, that's all, actually, that is all about humility, is not setting yourself up so high that you can't, you know, walk among the commoners, so to speak.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing with government. You know, you look at almost everybody in any level of government, and humility is the exact opposite of what is strikingly obvious about government. Like, if you look at any cop, as soon as he puts on a uniform, he kind of takes on a certain persona that is just really arrogant and obnoxious. And it's not just, you know, it's everybody in government. It's like every judge you've ever seen, as soon as he walks up to the bench and sits down.
Talk about a God complex, man, judges.
Oh, yeah. That's really messed up. To think that, you know, you walk into the room, everybody has to come to attention just because you walked into the room. And nobody's able to sit down until you sit down. Wow.
Yeah.
Little ego there, maybe? Little?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the drug of government can make you not think about that. It can numb the mind and make you think, oh, no, this is just what we do. Everybody stands up when the judge comes in. Everybody sits down when he sits down. That's just what we do. No, it's not. That's ridiculous. Think about it. You know, don't let government numb your mind. Really think about the things that we tolerate. There's a commercial on TV right now. I won't pick on a specific company, although we do that on occasion. But there's a commercial on TV where it's showing what they're kind of indicating is the Boston Tea Party. There's these guys on this boat, and they're throwing boxes of tea overboard. And there's English in a rowboat just off away from the main boat. And they're saying, wait a minute, what if we don't charge you a fee for doing your taxes? Would it be okay then? And all the guys on the boat like stop for a minute, and they're like, yeah, that'd be cool.
Ew.
And I see that commercial and I just want to scream. I'm like, no, no, it's not that a private company wants to charge you a couple bucks to do your taxes. That's not the issue at all. The problem is, how can one group of people tell another group of people, you owe me part of your income just because I'm me and you're you? What a thing to say to people. Boy, we're really not getting on the steps,
but
though.
But we are, man. This is all connected. I really think it is. You know, I've been to a lot of meetings, 12-step meetings, where, like, if you do this, like, they say you're going to drink. They're like, that's bad AA. You know, like, and I always think in conocentric, you know, parentheticals, hypertextual concentric parentheticals. But the point is, you have to, if you always get back in the storytelling to the point, it's not really, you know, it's not really a sidetrack. It's a little journey down a cool path. Like, hey, this path is cool, but let me show you what's over here and then come back. So bring it back, Brother Ben.
Yeah. You know, there's another thing that you've talked about. I've never observed this in AA because I've never gone to meetings and stuff, but you've talked about this, the difference between, you know, talking about examples of things and talking maybe about experiences that you've had, as opposed to living in the glory days when, you know, there was this one time I got so drunk, I blah, 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 and making a glory filled story out of something that, you know, really wasn't that great.
Yeah. A lot of people do that when they first get into AA. They don't really understand what the shares are about. And they kind of like, you know, get really into getting the laughs and talking about the things you did that were funny because they were so pathetic while drinking is not a share. That's like the first 2 minutes of a share. The only reason you do that is so the new guy coming in the door who has been like talked to his whole life, never by peers, he's never been talked to by someone who had the problem he had and got over it one day at a time. He's been like yelled at, like had a finger pointed out to him by his parents and by judges and by, you know, society, like, you're horrible, I condemn thee. Or like people pleading up to him, like a spouse, like, please don't spend the rent money on booze again. Please get sober for the family. You know, but the thing with 12-step programs is like, it's not someone yelling down at you or pleading up at you. It's someone like sitting across a table with a cup of coffee, like looking you in the eye saying, hey, brother, I've been where you've been and I'm not there anymore. And if you want help with it, I can get you out of it. I can help you get yourself out of it. You know, it's peer-to-peer networking, to use a computer term, among two people or, you know, a few people. It's kind of like first century Christianity. You know, it's not in a big cathedral. It's like groups, small groups of people going out across the land, speaking one man to another, you know, and spreading a message. And the reason people do it is because it helps keep them sober and sane, you know, working the steps, paying it back, paying it forward, whatever you want to call it. You know, it's kind of the perfect like open source brain software in humankind. I mean, I really think that the formation of the 12-step programs and the fact that they let other programs besides alcohol programs take them and run with them as long as they didn't say they were endorsed by them was the perfect. It was kind of like the Linux system. I mean, it was open source ideology. You know, back in the 30s, which was like, that was really the beginning of the American like intellectual property system going huge and really horrible and really, you know, beating people up. And these were guys who'd like, you know, they were like Wall Street people and doctors and lawyers and people who like lived in that system. But they said, hey, if we want this to spread, we have to do it a different way and we have to give it away and let people do what they want with it. And it really did. And it really worked. And if they'd like put more restrictions on it or charged money for it, it wouldn't have spread, man. And it wouldn't have helped people. And that's really how the good ideas spread. That's what I think.
That's kind of, you know, that's kind of going on the new model that we see on the internet too, of getting something out by giving it away for free. It's kind of like, if you want to guarantee that whatever the new product or service or whatever that you're offering on the internet, if you want to guarantee it's going to succeed, give it away.
And there's still ways to
guarantee it's going
to
fail.
To charge money for it or like demand certain criteria on it. The thing is, smart people can figure out how to make money on software they're giving away. And, you know, AA did too. Like AA has offices and they have a board of directors and they make money publishing the books. And, but you know, it's pretty much almost a nonprofit organization. I think it is a nonprofit tax wise, but you know, people can, we're actually charging people to help set up their home networks for Fiend Phone and people are donating. So we're making money a little bit, tiny bit on something that's free.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week, we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, drops some mad science for the end of Hour 1, the redemption in the third act of Hour 1 for the seventh step in Status Anonymous, please, brother.
So a little bit out of the book, it says, but again, we are driven on by the inescapable conclusion which we draw from AA experience that we surely must try with a will or else fall by the wayside. At this stage of our progress, we are under heavy pressure and coercion to do the right thing. We are obliged to choose between the pains of trying and the certain penalties of failing to do so. The initial steps along the road are taken grudgingly, yet we do take them. We may still have no very high opinion of humility as a desirable personal virtue, but we do recognize it is a necessity. Oh, it is a necessary aid to our survival. So, you know, we do kind of do this, whether we're talking about with the government or anything else that we're dependent upon. We have a tendency to go at it grudgingly. You know, we don't want to let go of the last thing. We don't want to have to move forward to the next thing. We don't want to have to deal with this stuff. And yet, in a very real sense, we have to. We have to face it. You know, humanity itself, I hate to put this out on such a grand scale, but humanity itself, if it doesn't do something about this addiction to power that we call government, if humanity doesn't do something about this, what's going to be the result? What's the result of constantly trusting in government? What does government eventually become? And all you have to do is just look North at government Korea. To see what it is. Yeah, except on a worldwide scale. You know, minarchists or small government Republicans or whoever, they might have this idea in their mind that, well, we've got this magic piece of paper. It's going to control government. You know, we've got the Constitution. That'll keep the government small and keep it controlled. Well, it's never actually done that. But that's the theory. That's what we want to believe that's going to take place. And yet, government just keeps growing, keeps getting more powerful, keeps intruding on more aspects of life. And if you just let your mind wander to what that's going to be in the long run, then you have to come to a conclusion that you're looking at something that will eventually engulf all governments around the world into a single or into one or two or three governments around the world that are all fighting to be that one major government. And that can't be good. That can't be good for humanity. It can't be good for individuals, but it can't be good for us as a species. Because now we have governments that are so powerful that they can lay waste to entire cities with a single bomb. And that's been the way for, what, 70 years, 60-some years? I guess 75 years or something like that. Anyway, math is not my strong point. But the fact that governments now can do that and the fact that there are multiple governments. So yeah, 70 years. And little governments like Israel have that power, and kind of crazy governments like Pakistan have that power. And, you know, there's once you get to that
North
point
Korea has that power.
Yeah, this is an insane system. And to think that, well, all we got to do is tweak it a little bit and it'll get better. No, we have to realize that this path that we're on leads humanity to destruction. And unless we humbly deal with this issue in our own minds on an individual basis, we can't change. I can't change Washington. I can't go running in there on a horse with a lance and fix government, because that's just fantasy stuff. You know, the idea that you can somehow influence worldwide governments like that, it's just fantasy. All we can do is fix ourselves. And if enough people come to the realization that they can be free of this addiction and free of government, then pretty soon there is no government, because the only reason governments exist is because people believe that it's good. People believe that we have to have it. If they didn't believe that, they wouldn't have it. It's a market issue. There is a government today. There are governments today because people want there to be governments. It's a market demand. But when the time comes that they want something other than government, it'll be just like, you know, wooden wheels when metal wheels became available, or it'll be like when cars became available and less people needed horses and wagons. It's just like that. We will move into a new thing when people recognize that the old thing is flawed and that there's something better. What do you think, Michael?
I think worms, man. You speak the truth, my brother. That's what I think. Good stuff. And we'll be back for hour two of step seven in Status Anonymous with Ben Stone, the Backbreaker, and Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and Ben from the Freedom Fiends. After this trip to the free market, and then probably some national and local news that will scare the heck out of you, and then we'll come back and tell you how to deal with all sorts of fears and problems, one day at a time.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza, on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. I am your host, Mr. Michael W. Dean. I'm joined by Ben Stone, Bad Quaker. And for the second hour here, we're being joined also by Lusander Fien. How are you, Lusander Fien? And have you been contacted by the government?
I'm doing groovy. I'm calling in from the failed state project.
And I can tell. I can tell by the quality of your internet. Your audio doesn't sound as good as usual.
Worse than usual. Wi-Fi signal has icicles hanging off of it. No, I tried to contact the government earlier this week, and their offices were closed because of the snow.
Yeah. Wow.
I thought they said through snow and sleet and rain and hail and lightning and thunder, we'll be there to do this garbage for you.
Yeah. Yeah, what happened?
That's just socialism for the boxes. They do that.
They just said that was what they said before they had a union.
Well, the mail's been late all week, so... Yeah, I'm not sure. I think the rain, sleet, snow, and dark of night kind of backed them up a touch.
So the federal government, they're interfering with interstate commerce by not allowing competition.
Pretty much. Well, they just interfere with their interstate commerce, period.
Yeah.
That's their job.
That's their job description. So do you want to tell me more about the government touching you in bad places, or is that it?
No, they weren't there to touch me, so I feel neglected.
You want them to touch you. They won't. Do you have to touch them? Are they asking you to touch them? Are they demanding it?
It's kind of like taxes are voluntary type thing. I don't really want to do it, but you know, if I don't, then things are, you know, not as good as I would want them to be. So yeah, I guess, I'm voluntarily enslaved.
So Ben, what can we do? What can we do to get out of that? And we are discussing Step 7 in Status Anonymous. Why don't you start by reading Step 7 in Status Anonymous, and then we can talk about it some more. Read from the book and talk about it.
We humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. Yeah, you know, you mentioned there the taxes being voluntary. There's a classic internet video of a guy who's interviewing Harry Reid, the senator from Nevada. And the guy is questioning Harry Reid about this idea that taxes are voluntary. And Harry Reid is legitimately trying to make the argument that taxes are voluntary. And he's saying that's the great thing about America. Unlike other countries, taxes are voluntary here. And it's like, dude, do you even listen to the words coming out of your mouth? Do you really believe this?
Yeah, that's why I was referencing that video is exactly what I was referencing when I said, you know, it's like taxes are voluntary.
Yeah.
But I suppose you could make the argument that robbery is voluntary. You got this guy standing in front of you with a gun and he says, give me your wallet or, you know, or your life. And I guess you could make the argument that you're voluntarily giving him your wallet because the other aspect of the trade is that he's going to kill you. So you're making the choice to live and give him the wallet. If that's voluntary, if robbery like that is voluntary, then I suppose taxes are voluntary as well.
Yeah,
sure. And let me invoke a little Spooner here. The fact is that the government, like a highwayman, says to a man, your money or your life. And many, if not most, taxes are paid under the compulsion of that threat. That was written, I believe, in 1867. And I think we're at the point now to where all taxes are paid under the compulsion of that threat.
Yeah.
Yeah, people don't want to really face that, because then if they think about it, they really want to understand that and they really come to grips with it, then they're forced to actually have to do something about it. And that's what people really don't want to do. They don't want to think about taxation to the point of where they're forced to really do something about it.
They've kind of hidden.
Well, definitely.
They've kind of, I mean, really, like, you know, the it's a fact that all laws, even nanny laws, are backed by the threat of a gun or the threat of a cage. And all taxes are backed by that, too. And if you haven't heard that theory, it's really simple. And it's basically that, you know, it's a little logic experiment that is true. And it's that if you, you know, refuse to pay your taxes, they'll send you a letter. If you don't, if you throw the letter away, they'll send you more letters. If you keep throwing away, they'll send a man here with a clipboard to your house. If you tell him to go away, they'll come back with that man and men with guns, and they will take your house. And if you resist, they will kill you. So that's the progression, and it's absolutely true. But they've gotten really good at hiding that, you know. And the lie that taxes are voluntary is a really blatant attempt to hide that. And it's not even doing a very good job with it, but they hide it with things like, you know, withholding, like your employer takes your money for you and gives it to the government and gives you what's left over in the check. And then you have to pay more at the end of the year, but you don't really notice that part very much that's taken, because you're just like, oh, cool, paycheck. And you go cash it. You don't read the fine print on it. There's a lot of examples of that, you know, hidden taxes, hidden costs and things. You know, like the cost of a candy bar, it's not just the tax on the candy bar, it's the tax on the truck that brought it there, and the gas in the truck, and the rubber on the tires on the truck, and things like that. It's all
or the sugar hidden subsidies.
Yeah, there you go. Yep, the factory. Yeah.
Or the quotas on how much sugar can be imported from places like Haiti.
Yeah.
Because of protectionism for the domestic sugar growers.
Yep. Or, you know, the fact that you know, they have cartels in every city or monopolies protected by the government of who can provide internet service, which is why Lou sounds so bad right now, because he doesn't have options. And in a free market, and I'm not talking about net neutrality, that's the opposite. That's enslavement disguised as freedom. But, you know, if it was a truly free world, he could get his internet from Billy Bob's internet down the street, and it'd probably be better.
Quick rip on net neutrality. The guy that's the head of the FCC, I almost said feces, but, well, same difference. The guy that's the head of the FCC
we're on radio, and I don't agree with what you just said. I must say, I do not agree with what you just said.
I don't agree with what I said either.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't agree with it either. It was a Freudian slip or something like
that's
that.
That's us anyway. Talking at the barrel of a gun, but of losing our shows. Yeah. So go ahead.
But anyway, the guy that's in charge of the FCC and will be administering net neutrality from, I believe it was 1979 to 1984, he was a lobbyist for the telecom industry.
Yeah. And he also raised a lot of money to help get Obama elected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for all you good liberals out there that want your internet protected and you want to keep out the corporatism, you got a corporatist coming in there.
In charge of it. Yeah.
Yeah. The fox is guarding the hen house.
Yeah. So Ben,
I guess that's one way to keep the fox from robbing the hen house is to put him in charge of it and let him get good and fat and happy by laying around the hen house eating everything that he wants constantly.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what we should do with all people in government, is just feed them so much. That was a joke that we had rolling around at the last Pork Fest with Bill Buport, that the solution to government is for everybody to buy donuts continually and feed cops as much as possible, so they all gain so much weight that they're incompetent.
That was kind of a mean. Yeah. Go on.
That even inspired the Give a Cop a Donut Day back in, I think it was September.
Yeah. And that's a no government man solution, but it's a modest proposal. He probably doesn't really think people should do that or would do that. An actual, like, kind of tongue in cheek, but maybe people believed it, minarchist solution I've heard. And again, minarchy is as much of a problem as believing in big government. You know, believing in small government is believing. It's probably more dangerous. Like, you know, a lot of people, Ben pointed out that if Ron Paul had won as president, he would have streamlined the government, and the next guy could have been like Hitler with what was, you know, like the great saving grace of the government is how inefficient they are. That's a plus. That's not something to try to fix. And one of the suggestions, Minerka's suggestions I've heard is paying every congressman $1 million a year to start with, but then docking them $100,000 for every law they pass.
I can't remember the exact quote, but Frank Charteroff back in the 60s told Murray Rothbard something to the effect. Well, Murray had said to him, well, don't you want to at least get government less painful for us? And Frank Charteroff's answer was something like, why in the world would you want to make it less painful? We're trying to get people to see what it's really like.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as it becomes less painful, it becomes more palatable and tolerable, and people get the false impression that it can be something other than what it actually is, a parasitic monster that devours everything in its reach.
Yeah. So, yeah. Ben, how does Step 7 help us deal with this, and what is Step 7 in Status Anonymous?
Step 7, we humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. And as we went through these other steps, you know, first we have to acknowledge that we have shortcomings. We have to recognize these problems. We have to talk. We have to find somebody to talk to about them, whether that's, you know, like with AA, you have sponsors. And Michael and I have talked about how we're kind of liberty sponsors to each other. We're kind of freedom sponsors to each other.
Same with all the fiends, though, you know, to some extent. Lou and I, yeah. And you and Diana and everybody. Ben.
Yeah.
Yes, Ben.
Yes. but we kind of like, you know, first off, you have to be absolutely honest with each other when you're dealing with this kind of stuff. To just have a yes man that will always acknowledge, you know, oh, you're right. You're absolutely right. Everything you say is good. Everything you say is right. That's not a sponsor. That's not somebody that's going to help you out. We have to have people that will be honest with us. And to humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings, we have to admit that we have these shortcomings. We have to be humble about it, in the sense not of groveling on the ground and being beaten or self, you know, beating ourselves or whatever. Yeah, yeah. It's a funny word. But we have to be willing to set aside enough of our ego to be honest with ourselves about our shortcomings. Because that's the only way that you're going to be able to deal with them. And like we were talking about, I think, in the last hour, or it might have even been the last show, kind of lost my thought there. I should mention that I do have brain damage, and sometimes my brain just turns off inadvertently. It's
Lou,
kinda like,
jump in there. Tag team, jump in there, Lou.
That's good advertisement for the fiends. Our hosts have brain damage. Going back to admitting the shortcomings, and this goes back to, I believe, it's step one, to admit that we are powerless over the problem that controls us.
State.
And it's not just alcoholism or substance abuse. It also falls into mental health problems also. And to be full disclosure here, I worked in the mental health field for a couple of years, and I've dealt with a lot of this stuff. I'm not a clinician, but kind of like a junior-ish clinician type. But anyway, yeah, so letting go of these shortcomings. Now, for those that don't believe in a higher power, a God or something like that, maybe you use yourself, or maybe you use whatever your motivation is to stay off of drugs, recover from mental health problems, or to abandon the state.
Yep.
And we'll be back more with more on this after when we come back.
I think it always has to involve other people, though. Can't just do it on your own, sit and listen to your own voices in your head. The hamster in your brain.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network. a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Bring us on back, Lou.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting live and worldwide from the Frozen State Project. I am joined by Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, and Michael W. Dean, the Iron Hamster.
Yeah.
Mr. No Snow in His Backyard.
Yeah, it's warm here today, man. All right, so go ahead, Ben. Elucidate us.
So the step seven, we humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. And I did have a little section of the book here that I wanted to read. As we approach the actual taking of step seven, it might be well if we AAs inquire once more just what our deeper objectives are. Each of us would like to live at peace with himself and with his fellows. We would like to be assured that the grace of God can do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. We have seen the character defects based upon short-sighted and unworthy desires. We have seen the character defects based upon short-sighted or unworthy desires are the obstacles that block our path towards these objectives. We now clearly see that we have been making unreasonable demands upon ourselves, upon others, and upon God. So we do, and of course this is for Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're Statists Anonymous, that's what we're trying to apply this to, but we do all want these same things. We want, to live at peace. We want to be at peace and to live at peace with our fellows. And we know that government is not going to provide that. All you have to do, you think, well, you know, government makes the streets safe. No, they don't. Look around. They have had plenty of time to accomplish this, and they haven't done it yet. The streets are not safe. What makes a street safe? When I walk down the street, I am the one that makes the street safe for me. Depending on some cop somewhere is not going to make the street safe for me. It's my ability to look around, to see where I'm at, to judge the people who are near me, to see what people's reactions and see what they're paying attention to. And I'm having a certain awareness of all those things as I walk down the street. And that's what makes me safe. Not the fact that I've got a phone that I can dial 911 and a cop can get there within 7 to 12 minutes. That's not safety. That doesn't bring me safety. My safety is dependent upon me being responsible for myself and taking actions for myself.
Yeah.
What do you think, Lou?
Well, let me jump in and talk about how the government has made the streets unsafe.
Yeah.
When you look at the number of robberies that exist to support drug habits or any other type of illicit thing, that is a direct cause of the war on drugs, aka no cartel or police agency left behind. People who rob other people in order to pay for their drug habits do so because of the artificially high prices of the drugs themselves.
Yeah.
With marijuana, it's a weed. It's literally a weed. It can grow anywhere.
It would cost $0.07 a dose without the government.
Yeah. Yeah. So why should this stuff cost $200 an ounce in Colorado on the black market? And by the way, that's about half price from what it was. I talked to a guy that just moved back to the area from there.
That's less than it is in the legal market. It's not.
Yeah,
it's way more than $200 an ounce in the legal.
Yeah, the only thing that legalization or so-called legalization did in Colorado was it lowered the price of the black market product. But the whole reason that these prices are high is because of the artificial market that's created by the war on drugs. The prohibition causes that. So an addict has to steal so much more than what they had to or than what they would have if the product was completely legal and 7 cents a dose, as Michael calls it. Because there are so much stolen goods out there, the market, meaning the fences, have so much available to them that they only pay 10 cents on the dollar for these stolen goods. So here you have people that are trying to feed their habit because of the government war on drugs, and to make it even less safe, most people are prohibited or greatly restricted from being able to defend themselves because some fat parasite needs to have job security and say, I'm the only one that can defend you.
Yeah, when a lot of times when people talk about maybe we need less government or no government, you know, the military guys and the police always jump in, especially the police or the lovers of the police, and say, yeah, you'll be the first one calling me when someone tries to break in your house. And like, that only works in places where you can't own a gun, or if you use it, you're going to get thrown in prison anyway, you know, if you use it in self-defense.
Well, it doesn't even work there, because here's what happens. When somebody goes to kick in your door, and they can get into the house in less than 30 seconds. Ben mentioned that the average response time is 7 to 12 minutes. In the Detroit area, sometimes it's 3 days.
But seriously, yeah.
Yeah, but what can happen during that 7 minutes?
Murder, rape, it's life theft, and death. Fraud, aggression.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Hitting you over the head.
So the cops will draw a chalk boat lineup around you and pretend to investigate.
And take pretty pictures of your dead body. Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash, if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash. And welcome back to the Freedom Fiends. Your daily dose of liberty. Ben Stone, Michael Dean, this is Lou Fiend. We were talking about the 7 to 12 minute response time for police responding to a 911 call. And basically the only thing that cuts that down is if the cops are already in your neighborhood revenue generating for code violations. But just to give you a little bit of an idea of how long that is, 7 minutes is about 2 minutes longer than that last segment was. And I saw a couple of videos on YouTube. They were news reports from local stations here. And one is a mom that was home with her two small children, and there were, I believe it was three teenagers that were trying to break into her house, and they were armed. The big thing that saved her was, so was she. She had a, I believe it was a high point 9mm carbine rifle, and she was firing shots at the kids to keep them from coming back in the house. I guess they got the door open and they were on the way in, and she chased them back out. And then they tried coming back in again. And what saved that mom and those children was the fact that she had that rifle. There was another incident also in the Detroit area. It wasn't in the city of Detroit, but it was two people tried to strong arm I believe it was a home business or something like that. And the security guard in the back room had an M4 carbine and chased the two would-be robbers out. So that there is self-reliance. Now, had those people not been armed, they would have been the chalk outlines. Yeah. They would have been in the pretty pictures. They would have been ugly statistics.
Well-photographed, very ugly pictures. That's what I meant by pretty pictures. Yeah.
Yeah, but they would have been statistics. They would have been numbers on the board. But anyway, so back to the seventh step. And Ben, do you have some more stuff to throw in here?
Yeah, you know, it really is about being responsible for yourself. And that's something that in a very real sense, faith in the government, faith in the state, one of the main things it does is it takes away that need for us to be responsible for ourselves. Whatever, you know, we talked about before, we've talked about the list of what do you want government to do for you? What do you expect it? Do you want it to give you a living? Do you want it to protect you from some evil guy far, far thousands of miles away that you're afraid of? Or in thinking about that, I've got a little section out of the book that I wanted to read. It says, the chief activator of our defects has been self-centered fear, primarily fear that we would lose something we already possessed or would fail to get something that we demanded. living upon a basis of unsatisfactory demands, we were in a state of continual disturbance and frustration. Therefore, no peace was to be had unless we could find a means of reducing these demands. The difference between a demand and a simple request is plain to everyone. And you know, and that's really what it is. We are so not, well, yeah, all of us to a certain extent have things that we fear. We fear, you know, is something horrible going to happen to my family, or am I going to have to deal with disease? Am I going to deal with, you know, what is that thing that you're fearful of? And then are you expecting this magic thing to take it away? Magic government, magic substance that you're dependent on, whatever it is that you're dependent on. Are you expecting that to solve your problems? And if you know, if you're thinking that the government's going to save you on these things, then you're just replacing, you know, one form of dependency with another form of dependency.
Yeah. Perhaps what people should really do is they should evaluate the track record of government on dealing with these things. As example, when it comes to the war on poverty, has the percentage of the population gone up as far as being impoverished since they started, quote unquote, helping us? I'm making air quotes over here. or has the number gone down? Now, I generally don't buy into government statistics, but their statistics from the census reports show that they're failing massively and people are becoming more impoverished and more people are becoming impoverished. So if this is their way of saying, hey, look at what we've accomplished, give us more power, then no. No, it's a massive failure. And, you know, whether those statistics are real or not, who knows? Maybe they're making it look like they're not quite as bad as they are and that it's actually a whole lot worse. But since government started helping, what has been the result? Same with, you know, protecting us from the boogeymen or the terrorists. Yeah.
That's kind of a typical thing with government, though, is first off, they'll invade and do something. They'll invade some aspect of society that they didn't used to provide a service for. So let's just use poverty, for example. That used to all be taken care of through voluntary charities, through people volunteering to help, through people, through churches, or through benevolent societies working together to feed the poor and
that's
to house the
now.
Poor. And yeah, government comes in, and the first thing they do is they start outlawing all competition. That's what governments do. They make it illegal to go in and help the poor, or they'll create incentives to punish you for donating to some organization. And one way or the other, all they're doing is doing the same job that somebody else used to do, but now they're doing it really, really poorly.
Yeah, they'll say, but private charity would never be able to handle this, and they leave out the fact that they made private charity all but illegal. Now, health benefits, unemployment benefits, a lot of these different things used to be covered through mutual benefit societies. Examples of that would be the International Order of Foresters or the Odd Fellows. They used to handle all these things, and a person could pay just a tiny bit of money each month for health insurance, and they would be covered to go to the doctor.
And unemployment insurance.
Yeah, unemployment insurance, even life insurance, death benefits. So these things all started out spontaneously through the market, and then it was basically nationalized and parasitized.
So. You know, my daughter lives in Dayton, Ohio, in a like 110-year-old house that was built by a German immigrant back around the early 1900s. And so the neighborhood that she lives in was actually a predominantly German neighborhood around 1900. And when she bought this house, I looked into the history and the culture and everything that was going on in Dayton, Ohio at the time. And what I found was that there were beer halls about every two or three blocks away from each other. Yeah. And these beer halls was where the German immigrants would essentially set up what we would call now a bar, but it wasn't just a beer bar. It was a place where, you know, wives from the community, the men mostly worked in the factories in Dayton, but the wives from the community would go down there and they would have sewing circles and they would help out, you know, newlywed couples. They would figure out what do they have in their home? What do they need? Do they, you know, what skills does this new wife have and what does she need? Or a new, you know, say one of them was a new mother. Well, the older mothers would bring them into the beer hall and they would show them, you know, how to do stuff, how to change diapers, how to keep diapers cleaner, and all the stuff that's involved in raising a baby. Each of the other mothers would work with and this included things like unemployment. When anybody in the community was unemployed, they would just go down to the beer hall. And the folks at the beer hall would try to figure out, okay, well, these are your skills. Where have you applied for a job? Who knows somebody that we can get him into a job at this factory or get him into a job at that factory? And all this stuff was taken care of in individual beer halls throughout the community. And so then the government comes in and decides, you know what we're going to do? We're going to have prohibition and eliminate all the beer halls. And so when one fell swoop, the whole German community in Dayton, Ohio, lost all their beer halls. They lost the ability to take care of themselves, and they were forced to basically depend on the government.
That sounds like a community center.
Yeah, that's what they were. They were little. Yeah,
and, you know, some people would say, well, why couldn't it still be one without the beer? Because partially the beer was driving, you know, the commerce of the beer was driving the ability to do that. And another part is the government went in and, like, you know, burned those places down and chopped them up and threw the people in jail. So there was nobody run it and no place to do it.
Yeah.
Another thing about Prohibition was Woodrow Wilson absolutely hated Germans. So he saw this as a really good way to stick it to the German folk.
Yeah. And Barack Obama really hates black young men. And that's why he's into continuing the war on drugs.
And literally, policies.
You know, it was started by old white guys who hated young black people and young hippie white people. And that's why the war on drugs was ramped up by Richard Nixon. But, you know, you got this cool black president they promised you. He's going to legalize pot. He even campaigned on decriminalizing it. Got elected. First town hall meeting he did, probably the last town hall meeting he did as president. You know, someone stood up and asked him, so you're going to decriminalize it? And he's like, ha, 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 I don't think we'll be doing that. You know,
sucker.
Yeah, that's typical politician, man. Yeah.
So each election is like Lucy holding the football for Charlie Brown.
Yep, absolutely.
If you vote one more time, there will be change.
So we got a couple minutes here before the end of the segment. Then we're going to come back for the redemption in the third act. You want to tie this back to the seventh step here, Ben?
Wow, you know, we're wandering in every direction today, but that's okay. I suppose sometimes it's good to just to have a fun show where we kind of go in every direction and everything. But I did want to read the step again, step seven. We humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. And again, it's based on humility, not on beating ourselves up or feeling pathetic and sorry for ourselves and all that kind of thing. It's about having a very realistic view that we are humans, we are flawed beings, we're not perfect, and that very often we depend on one another for some of the most critical things, some of the most crucial things. We depend on one another, and the only way we can do that is to humbly ask those around us for help when we're trying to get through these things, and recognizing our shortcoming, not being so proud that we can't recognize that we do have shortcomings and face up to them and honestly say, you know, maybe I can't defeat this thing today, but that's my desire, is to defeat it and to work towards that goal of defeating this thing that's holding me down. And be more than cooperative in the process of trying to overcome these things, rather than just buckling down and saying, nope, I'm right. I'm always right. I'm right on
this.
Which
is what government does. Government never humbles itself. It never admits it's wrong. It says it's right even when it's wrong. It's always wrong. And it posits itself as God. It wants to be your family. It wants to be your federal family. It wants to be every government in the world wants you to have to go to it for help to the point where it will destroy things that people are doing to help each other so it can remain saying that it is God.
Of course we're right. We passed a law that says so.
Yes, I declare today we are always right day. In the great state of... We'll be back.
In Texas.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Recovery from statism. Ben, if you could be so kind, could you read that? Could you read step 7 just one more time?
Sure. We humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings.
All right.
I also have a little thing here. Let me read this really quick, and then we can get into that. This is the final paragraph of the book that we've been referring to, The Seven Steps and the Seven Traditions. This is the final paragraph in this chapter. It says, the seventh step, which is where we make the change in our attitude, which permits us with humility as our guide to move out from ourselves towards others and towards God. The whole emphasis of step 7 is on humility. It is really saying to us that we now ought to be willing to try humility and seeking the removal of our other shortcomings, just as we did when we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol and came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. What do you think, Lou?
I'm going to give a real life example on this, and this is something I haven't talked about on the show before. Maybe I'll talk about it further somewhere down the line, but a few years back, I was homeless. And when I got to the shelter, a guy asked me, and he'd been there for a while, he's getting ready to move out. He says, so what brought you here? I was posed with a choice. I could release the burden of my shortcomings and my problems that brought me to where I was. Because to be honest with you, I was standing over the self-destruct button, hitting it like it was the easy button from Staples. I have to admit that every action that I did, although the intention was not there, but every action that I did was specifically to bring me where I was. So my choices were, I could admit that I had a problem. I could admit that I screwed things up. Or I could have responded, I came here on the shuttle bus. And the person that responds by saying, well, I came here on the bus or somebody dropped me off, they're not accepting responsibility for their actions. They're not accepting that they have a problem. They are under the impression that their current situation is just a temporary pit stop on their way back to, you know, the beautiful world. And it can be a pit stop if you are willing to do what it takes to recover from mental health problems, from alcohol and substance abuse, or recovering from statism. Part of my recovery from statism, what it has done is it has made me a much more balanced, a lot friendlier, a lot happier person. Rather than getting all flustered and freaking out over somebody doing something that I wouldn't do, I just say, well, if it were me, I wouldn't do that, but I see no reason to call the cops on you. And being able to accept that other people are different.
Thank you for your share. Seriously, man.
Thank you for listening. So, yeah, it's letting go of foolish things, of foolish ideas, such as you need to be taken care of or somebody will take care of you. And the people that are successful when it comes to getting out of a shelter or substance abuse or whatever it is, they're the ones that accept the responsibility of doing these things for themselves. They are the ones that say, the only way I'm going to get out of here is by knuckling down. And if you have to go to a higher power, if you have to have a Liberty sponsor that will guide you and show you what they did to be successful, then do it. And I highly recommend it because this is going off into the woods without a map, and these are woods that you've never been in before. So it's best to have a guide.
Yeah, there's no shame in admitting that you're facing something you can't overcome by yourself. Because really, all of us as humans, you know, this, the whole thing, the whole human experience, you just, I know a lot of, you know, wilderness survival types like to imagine a world where they could live out there on their own and they could make it. They know how to make a fire. They know how to build a shelter or whatever. But the reality is human beings are the kind of an animal that require a relationship with other human beings to really thrive.
Yeah, my moment of reckoning was when I realized that I just couldn't do it on my own, and to keep trying would be to hit bottom and start digging even further.
Worms. Thanks, worms. Guys.
And now look at me. Now I'm on the Fiends.
Woo-hoo. Now you're on the Fiends. I appreciate it, man. It's good having you on here.
It was a pleasure being had.
That's a Fiendism. And the Fiend Collective Mind, the Hive Mind, shares credit for that. I think it was Nima Vidani, actually. It's either me or Nima, but I'll say it's the Fiends.
I built that phrase.
You built that phrase. The delivery is what's important. We can steal jokes from each other. And it's a good thing. Worms. We share them, man. We spread them like a disease.